Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Well, good evening to you, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are, of course, powered by SID Media. Thank you so much for staying with us, and we really, really appreciate it. And every Tuesday, we do this thing called Technology and Innovations, and this is where we try and keep up with the trends of what's happening in the technological space. And novices like myself at least get a chance to understand what is really happening. And where are things going, right? And today is no different at all. If you want to interact with us, +27 7347 03520. That is +27 7347 03520. We're talking about facial recognition systems, an AI revolution or privacy threat. That's the question that we are trying to understand. Now, facial recognition technology has sparked many debates and controversies as well. And I think there's quite a lot of controversies, in fact. It is one of the fastest growing surveillance technologies, and it is present in our everyday life, often without us even realizing. I think if you walk into a mall, yes, you're under camera surveillance and all that, and your face can be detected and recorded, you know, those sort of things, right? So big data coach Timothy joins us to tell us a little bit about some of the concerns around privacy and safety. He is no stranger to this show, absolutely not, and we are delighted to have him again this evening. Good evening, sir, and welcome to the show.
Yeah. Good evening, Capello. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking. And how are you?
I'm doing well.
Ah, fantastic.
And, I'm glad to be back to the show.
Fantastic. I see you've been globetrotting.
Yeah, globetrotting.
And how's been globetrotting? Has it been fine?
Yeah, it's been fine. The Far East last week, just came back to Kenya. It's pretty much interesting to see that this conversation is not centered to a particular region, but there's actually global discussions that various professionals at different levels.
Oh, fantastic.
Trying to get
That's really interesting. That's really interesting. I've been following you. I was like, look at this guy. He's going all over the world. I'm like, can you just take me and put me in your pocket at least? If not, if I can't fit your pocket in your bag, I'm sure I can fit. So I can go to all these nice places that you're going to, eh?
Sometimes I wish I was like you, having my own radio station with a voice that can cross boundaries.
Look at that.
We don't have to travel. A very wider sphere of influence.
I see what you just did right there. For people who may not know you, who is Timothy?
Yeah, so I'm the CEO and founder of a predictive analytics lab.
Yeah.
So as a lab, what we do is we help organizations build their capability into data-driven decisions.
Yeah.
And that encompasses three areas. So building capacity in terms of training.
Yeah.
So we've got our bespoke training programs that help professionals bridge that gap.
Mm.
We help organizations in building softwares that leverage modern technologies such as artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
To be able to serve them in a more accurate and savvy way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, fantastic.
And then last is through strategy and consulting. So strategy and consulting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yes, that's what I do.
Yeah.
And, evangelism or advocacy is one of our key drivers, and we always appreciate such opportunities where we're able to share and demystify some of the emerging technologies to the wider masses.
No, we thank you for your time, and I know you're quite very busy, but we thank you for setting some time to talk to us. Okay, before we even get into the different softwares that are out there, particularly that are being used sometimes without, like we said, us even realizing it, facial recognition systems, just as a concept, what is that?
Yeah, so facial recognition system stems from a technology intervention that utilizes a human biometric to be able to to be able to provide proof of identity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So traditionally, identification of individuals has been a key a driver of access to services.
Yes.
Stemming from, for example, from a national level,
yes.
Security to identify identity,
yes.
From banking to give you access. So over the years, it's been able to advance.
Mm.
If you follow that history, you can see even from our old fathers.
Yeah.
The great grandfathers, they used to have a form of identification, which was a tag that would be put on their skin.
Mm.
Some marks
would
be embalmed on their skin to identify them.
Yeah.
Based on the time of the year they were born, based on the months or even the region where they were born.
Ah.
That evolved into use of fingerprints.
Sure.
Yeah, so when you had the fingerprints starting to be used as a way of identification, and
yes.
that came into the fact that we are looking for a unique feature that's able to identify one person from the other.
Okay.
So, yeah. So now, in terms of biometric, it's a combination of mathematical algorithms and technology.
Yes.
That over the years, a lot of research has been done.
Mm.
To be able to create one distinction, just the same way we do DNA. So the DNA process is a bit lengthy.
Mm.
Yeah, of course, the key identifier, but then you'd like to have an intervention that's at the touch of a finger or at a glance, you're able to deny a service or grant someone a service.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's where now the biometrics came in. So we have a range of different biometrics that are used for identification, not just face, but also voice. Voice is also a part of a biometric that's used. And then also gait.
Mm.
Yeah, how you walk is also. So we've seen advancement and all of it building up on the facial recognition, which was the initial area to be in terms of identity.
Yes.
So that's basically what facial recognition is.
Yeah.
Its application in day to day on our mobile phones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Scan your face for your mobile to grant you access to some app.
Yeah.
We see it in buildings where you can scan your face for that to be provided. And other areas, even some ATMs will not give you money unless they recognize your face.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It sounds like, especially here in the African continent, we've always found a way to, although we aren't as at the time, advanced as the world might have thought we were. But it seems like these things start here in Africa, from the tagging to some or other way of identifying things. We've always been at the top of these things.
Mm. Yeah, we've been, but at least for this particular one, been left a little bit behind. And then, the key case studies I'd like to share to that context. So, for example, with Facebook, it does there's an algorithm called digital geometry where it matches people's faces. So there was a case here in Kenya where two sisters were separated at birth.
Okay,
but 17 years later, they were able to reconnect on Facebook just using that facial recognition technology that matched one to another. When you go to Facebook and you see your friends you may know.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's how they matched. So those algorithms are able to match different faces looking similar.
That's really interesting.
So, and these are engineers who are sitting in San Francisco, but they're able to provide interventions in remote areas.
Yes,
because in a very remote village in Kenya, don't even have access to internet all the time. But they uploaded their photos online, and that was able to be good.
Yeah, intervention. That's really lovely.
Yeah, we see that. Yeah, we see that now that because of being in Africa and a lot of these technologies coming in to solve some of those traditional problems.
Yes, yes.
What these systems leverage on is, for example, the color of the skin.
Yes.
Yeah, so in more nuanced applications, such as identifying gestures, identifying features, there were some cases of a system that was deployed in the US that had a bias. Yeah, so most of the time it was a bias, it's black faces, identifying a black face as highly to be highly criminal. Yeah, so this system was deployed with the police force, but it had to be discontinued because of that bias. Yeah, so there's that application use that's also of concern.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're using what we call machine learning technologies, and once the model starts learning by itself and it can learn to go in a way that's biased. Yeah, of course, there's a way that the AI engineers can be able to tune it to fit a certain context that will be verifiable and also suitable to the a certain norm.
Yeah.
Yeah. However, the magnitude of data required leaves out most of us in Africa. A lot of data has to be fed. And then the diversity in our physical appearances also contributes to that.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of factors actually contribute to having a disadvantage when these solutions are being applied in Africa.
Yeah, makes absolute sense. I suppose we need to find an African solution then to these type of things that can take into account those factors and variations in the African people and all that. Okay, without wasting time then, what are some of those softwares that I suppose are used for facial recognition that, to add a little bit of spice, that we are not even aware that they are being used regularly?
Okay. So I'm going to talk about specific softwares, but I think from an application perspective, in social media, you always see when you post someone's photo and it auto-generates a square on their face, which means it's recognized in the face and it's asking you, can you tag this person? Can you confirm this is so and so?
Yes.
Yeah, so already that's one of the technologies that's its application in social media.
Okay.
Yeah. We have use cases in offices when you just go to the office and you appear there, it opens the gates.
Yes.
We have applications in immigration departments.
Okay.
So, for example, like the Dubai airport, where in some African countries, like in Tanzania, we've done it, Rwanda. We don't have to take your passport for scanning. We just stand at the gate. It takes a photo of you, it recognizes you, and matches you to the your passport details. So it's automatic. Immigration process.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of those evolving.
Yes.
And in the context of work, again, most employees are able to be identified using that.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the workplace. And you can be able to tell the visitors coming in at what time.
Yeah.
So we've removed that need to have a book at the entry where someone signs.
Yes.
So this is non-intrusive.
Yeah.
When someone walks in, you know he walks in at our time.
Yeah.
Using that facial recognition technology. Yeah. Also, one of the advanced use cases, for example, in China, you'll find even on the streets where they've got a lot of cameras wired, they use the facial recognition now to assign what we call social score. When you... Yeah, social score is similar to a credit score, which analyzes your financial behavior and assigns you a score based on your behavior.
Yes.
Now, a social score will analyze your behavior on public places. So, for example, I knew someone who would litter aimlessly. Yeah, I knew someone who will not obey traffic lights and so on and so on. So, it helps enhances what we call social policing. Social policing, they said that after some time, you can be able to check your score and say, okay, fine, at this time, you didn't behave well, you littered at some this corner, or you didn't pave way for the traffic at this time.
Yeah.
So we have that being applied in China, and that social score is actually used even for employment, for example. Some employers want to come with a struggle, and that can be used to streamline and enhance behavior when consumers are aware that their behavior is being observed.
Yes, yes. I think the part about it contributing to employment is just too scary, because I think a lot of us, if we were to be honest with ourselves, we wouldn't want that, eh?
Sure, we get away with a lot.
We get away with a lot. Yeah. What are the pros and cons then of these systems?
Yeah, so I think one of the pros is efficiency and being able to eliminate what we'll call like a bias, for example. Yeah, and then automation. When you have systems running autonomously, it creates more access to services better. So you can imagine the context of a long queue at an immigration desk because the human to human action. Yeah, but on the self check-in or the self the self administered desk, there's less queues there.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The other advantage is availability of the data, because again, you're able to track the spatial, to create interventions, and you're able to bring about the desired change based on what data that's been collected and analyzed.
Yeah.
And on the cons, one of the things is the digital divide. We will tend to leave out a certain segment of the consumers or economy who are not well versed or who are not well attuned with this. So that's something to be cognizant about. Also, the bias when these models are being trained to behave in a particular way, you tend to get biased.
I suppose, especially on the bias part, and this leads me to my second, my next question, right? Especially on the bias, because if it can gather data about my social, social behavior, traffic lights, when I'm in town, littering and all those sort of stuff, it creates a certain bias. And that bias is obviously saying, this guy is more likely to litter. So when I'm traveling in town, I'm not going to even litter on that day, but it already looks at me and says, this guy probably will litter. And then the authorities, obviously, when they see me, because of this thing, they're like, let's follow this guy, right? And let's see where he ends and all that. Doesn't that then raise questions around privacy and what implications from that are?
Yes, I think one of the key pillars that drives the application of it is having a well-regulated and a well-informed society. Which means that there's need to raise awareness about data consent, especially in public places. The government may require to have that information and declare that this is what we're using this data for well in advance. So something that's inevitable.
So does them declaring necessarily then I suppose make it okay that they've declared that you are under surveillance, for example, and they can get away with it in a court of law to say, but you are treating me unfairly. Yes, I might have a history that you've documented through this thing that I didn't even sign up for, to be, you know, having camera always following me. But it's fine. I understand why you are doing it. But I think you're treating me unfairly. Can governments get away with it?
Of course, through civil action, pressure groups and lobby groups can be able to hold the government accountable.
And
through the various governments, their policy organs, such anomalies or such issues can be addressed. Where the citizens' rights can be able to be respected.
Okay, all right. So I suppose the regulators need to inform themselves then.
Exactly. Yeah. It's called privacy by design.
Yeah.
Privacy by design.
Yeah. Okay. All right. There's this guy I follow on TikTok, right? And what he does is that he goes to, he's an American guy in the West. He goes to public places that are government owned, like your state owned home affairs, for example, or your state owned police station, or whatever the case might be. And he goes around filming the area. And in most of the videos that he uploads, either the security guard or the employees or some other public person that came to that public place and utilized that public place finds it a bit odd to say, why are you recording me, for example? And always his argument is that you're in a public place, you're in a government-owned public place, and there's nothing wrong that he's doing, right, in recording what's happening. And he always gets away with it because is like, but I'm filming in a public place, which is by law not breaking any type of laws. Are there any privacy issues there in a public place when you are recording and filming, or there are restrictions, I suppose? And where I'm getting to is, in these public government owned, there's always these cameras following us around as well.
Yeah, so I think in that context, it's and depending on the region where he's operating, it's, how is has he sought consent?
Yeah,
for the subject that he's filming. Yeah. So you've got sectors such as in journalism.
Yeah.
Yeah, they used to enjoy blanket immunity.
Yes.
When such kind of broadcast or a collection of that information.
Yeah. Yeah.
However, that is changing.
Okay.
There has to be consent and declaration of how that can be.
Because now you all of a sudden you're not even a social media person. You find yourself on social media and your video is on social media and all that. But I found that quite interesting in the context of what we're talking about as well, because it's obviously a public place. There will obviously be cameras. The government can use them to recognize and do certain things with them. And he's taking advantage, I suppose, of that as well to say it's a public place and I can do filming if I want. And in one of the other videos, he was arguing that what if something happens to me with this official, or what if this official lies to me, you know, or says something that is not incorrect, and then it sets me off on a wrong path or whatever, and then I suffer some or other material damage. So that's why he records everything, interactions and all those sort of stuff. Because I suppose with that you know, wave in America where Black Lives Matter type of a thing, you know, made this whole thing of recording interactions with public servants quite very, very important. And then, of course, the installation of those cameras and some other, you know, devices to record everything in public areas became quite important in America. And I don't know, but maybe these are some of the things that, you know, raise questions around privacy and making sure that there is consent from, especially someone who is not necessarily a public servant in a public area and all those sort of stuff. But then here's my question. Are we going that direction in inevitably? In other words, everyone is going that direction, and at some stage we'll be forced to, like you said, in China there's these cameras going around as well. Or is there a way to completely avoid leaving any type of digital footprint, particularly in the form of facial recognition that you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. So there is a drive towards that. Of course, alignment with the global standards. One in terms of the technology being utilized to do the facial recognition.
Yeah.
So there is what's called a library.
Yeah.
A library of annotations where the references are centralized.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happens is according to the different features of a face. And which region scholars have been contributing to that, and also researchers to be able to call false positives when a face is not recognized accurately.
Mm-hmm.
Those cases have always been reported, and there's a collection of library that's used collectively by various stakeholders.
Yeah.
And then also in terms of regulation, you've got rules that govern. Especially after the advent of the ChatGPT, most governments have come up with measures to address that aspect of data and its implication on society.
Mm.
And some of these facial recognition applications are what may be able to prevent utilization of skills, utilization of
Oh, interesting, interesting. Earlier on when you started, you said, you know, Africa is behind. And this is my question as we draw towards the end, to say, what are then the trends that you have picked up in your traveling as well, particularly when it comes to technology or some other revolution? Because the question we're trying to answer is, these facial recognitions, are they a revolution or a threat to privacy and all this sort of stuff? You spoke about regulations and, you know, some measures or other that governments are taking around the world. What are the trends that are coming through that you're seeing?
Yeah. So one of the key trends you're seeing is mainstreaming of these applications.
Yeah.
So initially it started as a pre-server for scholars.
Yeah.
And this is from the early 50s going on to the 60s, 70s, advancement of compute power.
Yeah.
We're now seeing what we call edge computing.
Yeah.
Where devices are coming embedded with the sensors that can be able to detect on the fly.
Ooh.
Yeah, so previously you would have to record or take a photo of a subject for you analyze.
Yeah.
But right now it's through in connectivity.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can pretty much find someone's image anywhere and you pull it out.
Mm.
We're also seeing a change in user, consumer behavior.
Mm.
For example, we're now seeing a lot of what we call the Gen Z utilizing a lot of voice search and image search and picture search in Google.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you look at, for example, the latest Google Maps intervention is about photos.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So the latest about the maps. Yeah. So the you can pretty much take a photo of something and then upload it there. Then it tells you exactly where that item was purchased or where it was manufactured, or if it's a mineral, where it was mined.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's where we're headed with the advancement that we're seeing currently. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, then also one of the advancements is through education. So we're finding a lot more capacity, a lot more awareness, and not just from the user perspective, but also from the scholars under technology adoption. So pretty much a lot of PhD thesis papers being written in the subject of AI.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's find we are now becoming more and more attuned to inclined towards that.
Yeah,
through, okay. Towards AI. So that's one thing that should be commendable.
Yeah, that's lovely. And how do the average person like myself prepare oneself for these new recognition systems coming up?
Yeah, so one of the things we can be able to consider is perhaps to reskill and upskill.
Yeah.
Yeah. To look at your space in the look at your space in the narrative of what disruption is awaits you. So from a skill perspective, and also if it's a business you're running, what are those threats you're experiencing? So to have that article digital dexterity to anticipate change and not wait for the change to drive you.
Yes, sure. Yeah. Anticipate change.
Yeah.
All right. That's lovely. Thank you, Coach. Where can people find you and where can they find your services as well?
Okay. Yes. So you can find me on LinkedIn under the name Timothy Oriedo. That's my default platform for networking.
Yeah.
We also have our website, which is www.predictiveanalyticslab.co.ke. Yeah, so, and then just on Google, if you search my name, Timothy Oriedo, you could be able to find easily, and the various platforms you can be able to reach me on.
Ah, fantastic. And we can confirm that if we take your picture, put it on Google, we'll still recognize you.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Thank you, Coach. Really love your insights. Yeah.
Apart from now, I had an incident in Vietnam where I had to go for a haircut. So that was,
I saw that.
Beard, so the systems are having challenges to recognize. Yeah.
I actually saw that. Yeah.
I was locked out of some applications. Yeah. Because of the apps. Yeah.
Yeah, I never do that haircut again, eh?
Yeah. But it was a failure in communication.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So
So I went back to my barber today to start correcting that. When I traveled back to Kenya, my first stop was at my barber.
Yes. Yeah. Just made my day. Thank you, Kush.
Yeah. You too.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
And it's fun. Thank you.
Definitely. Keep talking. Oh, the coach has just made my day there. Saying that his apps didn't recognize him anymore and he was struggling now to go through some of his apps. Yeah. Thank you, coach.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.